Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. We are coming up on the end of November, which means this week is Thanksgiving week. We will be closed on Thursday. We're all going to enjoy turkey.
With our friends. As you're listening to this, you are quite possibly coming down from your turkey high.
It's possible. You know, you mean everyone doesn't listen to this Wednesday morning first thing?
Yeah, I was going to say, why aren't they listening to
it? Oh, that's true. Everybody
first
is listening Wednesday morning first thing.
Everybody, first
they
thing Wednesday.
They have to know what comics to buy.
Exactly.
I have awakened. It is podcast time.
And then after Thanksgiving on that Friday is our annual Black Friday sale, which, as we've explained numerous times, but I'll tell you one more time, is every $25 you spend, you get a $5 gift certificate, which you can spend as early as the next day. And if you are a Rogue card holder, you can get it's $5 for every $20 you spend.
This is the day to shine.
Either way, great deal.
Yep, great deal. We hope to see a lot of people in on Black Friday. It is always a fun day for us. Unlike the people working sort of mass retail, where it's a death march slog, we actually enjoy it. It's fun to start seeing everybody shop doing the Christmas presents and
writing gift certificates for people is fun on our end.
Yep.
Well, maybe not the 1,000th one, but it's overall fun. And, by the way, I did the Toys R Us thing for many years.
Yeah, you did the real Black Friday.
I've done the serious Black Friday stuff. It left scars.
Yeah.
But it's made me into the man I am today. You know how in Conan he has to push that wheel of pain?
Uh-huh.
And you're like, my God, that's horrible.
Toys
but then he becomes real strong.
Yeah.
It's like that.
Keep going. No.
So much like that. And then the analogy can continue.
Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
But at a later date. And I thought it through a little bit more when my Conan and myself fan fiction.
You're going to write your own Conan Dave slash fic.
Just go to Dave's webpage. It's all there. It's really good. Let me just say that right up front.
And then that Saturday, for the first time, local comic shop day, which is also Small Business Saturday. Yeah. We will, of course, always encourage people to come into local, shop local. That's good. But that Saturday, we'll also have a variety of variant covers and some oversized things like an oversized Rick and Morty Invader Zim. Some of the variant covers, there's a Bitch Planet hardcover that's limited.
There's a Space Riders hardcover.
Space Riders hardcover, which is a local, our small press Black Mass Studios.
Yeah, Fabian Ringel Jr.
Yep. Fabian Ringel Jr. is, I believe, Dallas-based, Houston-based. He's local-ish.
Yes, he is.
And he's the writer on that. If you anticipate things like that, also a variant cover for Dark Knight DK3 that is a local comic shop day only. So if you like the variants, there's going to be a lot of those. And if you don't like the variants, we got all kinds of other stuff here you can buy.
That's true.
Start your Christmas shopping.
That's right. Finally, one bit of news that is not store related directly, and that is that the Legends of Tomorrow trailer officially dropped.
Right. Now, we've seen trailers for it.
Yeah. Well, they call this the first look, and I'm like, this is not the first look. I've seen.
This is the first full trailer. I think the last one we saw was a bunch of clips from Arrow and Flash, sort of building it up, and there were a few
teases. But there were definitely – I mean, they showed a robot smashing down. They showed Rip Hunter. They showed stuff that was actually –
but they didn't show the length of what we saw in this trailer.
No, agreed.
This one has a bit – this has more of a narrative structure to it.
Yes.
It's got an outline of a very precise mission, and I think we all – first of all, we all liked it, right?
Oh, it's a great trailer.
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
I just can't wait to see Arthur. Is it Darvill?
Arthur Darvill.
As Rip Hunter. It looks like he's going to eat up every scene. And now he has a time-traveling device. He doesn't need the TARDIS anymore.
Yeah. Does it look like it's like a big old ship kind of thing?
It's like a big old ship.
Which is kind of cool because you get some of that, Battlestar Galactica, Stargate Universe. It's essentially a headquarters and their time travel device in one.
Yep. I was going to say, he should have a time sphere, but they've already mentioned the time sphere in Flash, so.
You know that thing's going to get infiltrated by bad guys or something.
Oh, sure.
It's going to be cool.
But
they showed the big bad in very
Vandal
close.
Savage.
Yeah, and he looks cool.
They did a great job on him.
Well, when they cast somebody for Ra's al Ghul in Arrow, it was they kind of missed the mark.
His look was okay, but the character was the actor was
bad.
But
the person that they have casted for Vandal Savage looks awesome.
Yeah,
for those who might not know, Vandal Savage generally an immortal badass kind of, and he was like a
caveman
or a caveman or something. Yeah, who somehow became immortal. I don't even remember how.
It was a meteor, right?
It was a meteor.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And he's generally he's like somewhere between like Genghis Khan and like Lex Luthor or something
Yeah, that's about right.
He's generally a pretty scary bad guy, and he looks cool in this. I think he's going to live up
to it. So do his troops. His troops look cool.
Yeah. And let's see, what else did we see in the trailer?
Well, they showed, they gave us a little one shot of all the different characters.
Everybody, yeah, got that. It was a roll call.
White Canary, we saw Hawkman, Hawkgirl, we saw...
I was impressed at like the effects on them.
The effects look really good.
They look fantastic. Yeah. There's one where like Hawkman swoops in, is like kind of gliding down and like pulls in his wings to kick somebody, like hits him really hard.
Yeah.
And I was very impressed.
But we also get Firestorm, which you get some great moments.
Yep. Professor Stein as well, sort of separate.
I think one of the reasons that they had to hold back this trailer is that they gave away some stuff from Arrow and Flash this season. Like,
they did.
The Firestorm thing, they couldn't reveal that before Firestorm had happened in
it's true.
Flash.
It had all the distant shots and stuff like that.
So I like that they did hold on to this. And, of course, White Canary, they couldn't reveal why she was back and how she was back and all that stuff. So now that they've got some of that stuff in place, they could give us the shot of everything.
Apparently in the first episode, I'm guessing the first episode, they're going to go to the 1970s.
Yep.
which looked fun. And that reminds me, of course, Captain Cold and also
Heatwave.
Are they siblings in the show?
No, they're just buddies.
Right. But they've got his sister.
But they played siblings on another show.
Yes.
They played siblings on another show.
The actors played siblings on Prison Break. Yes.
But it looks like they'll be the kind of fun wild cards in the group.
Yeah.
I'm sure the guy. Well, kind of the equivalent sort of in the old Suicide Squad comic of what Captain Boomerang or Deadshot used to be.
Yeah.
To be like, you know, this would be, we could solve this a lot quicker if we just killed him.
Yeah.
Although, if you try and kill Vandal Savage, I think it's going to go badly for you.
Also, Brandon Routh as the Atom has been great.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure about his whole crazy Iron Man suit thing, but now that they've combined it with shrinking powers, I kind of like it.
Yeah. It was sort of the evolution thing, sort of like Arrow. Took a while for him to get there, but now he's there. He's good.
Yeah, I like him, and there's some great interaction between him and Captain Cold, Heatwave, and all that. So I'm really looking forward to this. It premieres on January 21st.
When we were watching that, I was thinking, this is hugely special effects laden, and they're pretty good special effects.
Yeah.
And I think you're right, Randy, that the first episode is probably going to be particularly
heavy
on it. But a lot of those people have FX heavy powers.
It's true.
Firestorm does. Captain Cold and Heatwave do, honestly. The Hawks do.
They've managed to do a lot of that on the Flash budget, though. They've used Firestorm pretty heavily. They've used Captain Cold pretty heavily. It seems
they actually have, every week, they have pretty heavy effects. They find ways, I'm sure, to sort of do it.
We're sort of fortunate
ways, but
we're fortunate to be living in an era when I guess you can do pretty great special effects on a pretty decent budget.
Well, it helps that Grant Gustin is paid only in hugs.
Aw. He does seem adorable.
Well, Melissa Benoist is paid in puppies, as we saw in that video. So
she then devours.
It's a good time to be a superhero fan on TV. And if you're watching the CW online on your laptop or whatever, and you're streaming it from CW.com, you might see you might hear a familiar voice and see an ad for a familiar comic store.
Like the very voice you were hearing right then?
Yes.
The voice of you?
Yes, the voice of me. Yeah, we're advertising at least for the next couple months on the CW streaming site, so we have a little ad running, which is kind of cool.
I haven't seen it yet.
Have you not?
No.
Well, you can't get the streaming site to work for you.
Yeah, that's true, but that's probably temporary.
We've had at least a couple customers tell us about it, and if you do see it, please let us know. It's good for us to know that it's out there and running, and even better if someone comes in who we haven't seen before and tells us that they saw it.
So. Yes.
All right. That about wraps up our quick intro this week. We are just going to go straight into comics. We don't need a break this week.
Yep.
So we were talking about comics for Wednesday, November 25th, which new comics are in as usual this week.
No delays.
No delays, thankfully.
Yep. So you can get your comics and you can eat them after your turkey cool down.
Yes. Eat them?
You can
devour them?
Metaphorically, yes.
Okay, all right.
Eat them.
Don't eat your comics.
I mean, unless you want to.
I guess if you really want to.
You get fibers, paper, right?
Yeah.
Now, are we going to start with the elephant in the room for this week?
We're going to start with the big release this week, which is DK3, The Master Race, number one, which I believe we mocked pretty roundly when it was first announced.
It's true, we might
have. We were highly trepidatious about it.
And end result, did anyone here hate it?
No.
Yeah. I kind of liked it.
Yeah, it was actually pretty good, or at least an interesting first issue.
It's none of our picks, because we're all Marvel whores, and we all like Marvel stuff better, and Image stuff,
it's got some stuff going on that's actually interesting.
Well, when I read it, and I said that it's kind of what I wanted out of, if they were going to do Dark Knight Strikes Again, if they're going to do DK2, this is kind of what I wanted. Right. Not the, here's every weird hero, here's Adam in a Petri dish, here's Lex Luthor as a crazy psychopath, all this stuff. But instead a sort of a continuation of, well, if Batman is gone and vigilantism is still not really popular, what does that mean? What happens with the new commissioner? What happens with, and then what happens if you bring in a couple wild cards like Wonder Woman's child and Superman's child? You know, what if you kind of go forward to the future of the DCU?
Right. Well, you mentioned Dark Knight Strikes Again, and that was, and that tanked for most everybody. I do know there are some people who are like, I love its anarchic style.
Yeah, sure.
But this feels somewhat more like a continuation of Dark Knight Returns, which, although that had definitely a satirical streak to it, it was not. There was also a quasi-realism to it. It was still the book that got people talking about Batman and realism the most, which is crazy because it's also one where Batman rides a horse after a nuclear apocalypse.
Sure.
And, you know, leads a charge of mutants.
Carries an M60 and shoots a woman with Nazi tits.
Yep. And yet, realistic.
Realistic.
That was in the 80s, that was realistic. It wasn't Biff Bam Pow.
That's true.
But anyway...
So there's this feels like a
continuation of that tone, though.
This also, there have been rumors floating around that Frank Miller basically provided a plot, and that this is mostly Brian Azzarello's story along with Andy Kubert on art. And it does feel somewhat Millerless, and yet it does feel like Frank Miller. It feels like this is Azzarello's interpretation of a Frank Miller story.
Right. Well, there's like still several of the tropes of
Dark Knight sure.
that show up, like for instance the. You know, sort of the somewhat satirical...
newscasters.
Yeah, it was almost like channel hopping.
Yeah.
So you get newscasters. There's a guy who's clearly like an Al Sharpton type.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, part of the sort of outrage machine. And I'm going to guess that this guy is maybe sort of an Anderson Cooper right there.
Yeah.
And anyway, the so there is still like a satirical streak to it. And there is also sort of a... relevance a little bit in that sense of current of to current events. Where,
by the way, Dave, that's not Anderson Cooper. That is Keith Olbermann.
Oh, is it?
Because it's Keith Olbermann and Bill O'Reilly. Clearly.
Oh, you're right.
Being
yeah,
referenced.
That's right. That's definitely Bill O'Reilly. What was I saying?
I don't know. I had to interrupt you. Correct you. Sorry.
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway, one of the sequences. I got to say, I really like the art. Andy Kubert on art Kubert's is art. Really good.
Beautiful.
With Klaus Janson on inks. And there's a sequence with Wonder Woman fighting this Minotaur cross thing.
Yeah.
That is just fantastic looking. Yeah. His Wonder Woman is a badass, and I thought that was some of my favorite stuff in the book. But they also reference Wonder Woman's daughter. They reference Superman's daughter.
Among other things, there's also the commissioner is it Yindel?
Yindel,
is
that how you say
her name? Yep. Who will go back to the original Dark Knight Returns. People remember, so there is definitely a continuity of characters going on there.
And in kind of a surprising nod to sort of the Black Lives Matter thing,
that's what I was trying to say.
Batman is fighting cops.
Yes.
I mean, cops are about to shoot innocent black people, but cops, and it's sort of like that is an interesting bit of a social. I mean, Dark Knight Returns was a social reaction to like 80s fascism and all that kind of stuff,
right?
And this is
it was always a little bit hard with Miller to know if he was sometimes embracing something or skewering it.
Yeah,
but
this seems to be very much a reaction to a lot of that stuff going on right now, and it is, you know, Miller is a little crazy politically right now, and
but I think he broadly has an anti-authority streak.
Yeah,
and I think to him, Batman represents the ultimate. You know, check against authority.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting. We've seen Batman as sort of the outsider that the cops don't trust him because they don't control him.
Right.
But he's always been fighting like supervillains. Right. To have him actively countering like corrupt cops.
Well, you know, doesn't that fit though?
It does fit.
He countered Superman.
Yeah.
In Dark Knight Returns, and that was Superman as government sort of stooge.
It absolutely flows out of what he did. It was one of those things where I'm like, I hadn't thought about it. But it's such a direct connection, it makes perfect sense, and it makes it a little more relevant. So
right.
I'm kind of surprised. I expected this to be sort of over the top, dated, not that interesting, and I really liked it.
Azzarello kind of reined it in.
He
added his own sort of punch to it, and Azzarello is a great writer. I think he works well with other people, and like you said, I think Kubert's artwork on here.
I have my issues with Azzarello, notably his sort of obtuseness, which I did find in here a little bit, but I think this is some of his stronger work. Yeah.
Comic is all Miller, I believe,
yes,
although
yes.
also inked by Klaus Janson as per the original Dark Knight Returns. And it sort of zeroes in on the Atom specifically. Yep. I also noticed Klaus, I think, was inking, or Frank Miller was drawing in such a way to evoke a little bit of Gil Kane's artwork. Gil Kane being the guy who like did the original design for the Atom, and I think drew all the early Atom issues back in the Silver Age.
The mini comic feels like a side story in this universe. It doesn't have to do with the main story.
No.
Now, maybe it will.
Actually, it does.
They do reference it.
They reference something that happens at the end of the main story.
Yeah. And the other, that's the important thing to note is that read the film, read the main story, then go back and read the mini comic.
Right. Otherwise, you'll kind of get the ending spoiled.
Yeah, but the ending does have a bit of a shocker that I liked, and I'm curious to see where they go.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I'm going to read issue 2, which is not what I expected to be saying after I read this book.
Yep. So, a quasi-recommendation from all of us.
Yeah, it's not our pick, but definitely worth a look.
Should we mention that this is the regular edition, which will hit tomorrow.
Yes.
And then 2 weeks from now, is that correct?
Yes, 2 weeks from now is the collector's edition.
It's the collector's edition.
And I believe I definitely had forgotten that those were spread apart by 2 weeks. So if I told anybody that they're hitting on the same day, sorry about that. My bad. You got to wait 2 weeks.
Yep. We may need to double check anybody who's down for the collector's edition to make sure that they get it if they wanted it.
Yeah.
All right. So, Dave, what is your pick for this week, though?
Okay. Actual pick is a book that I was indeed looking forward to and was pleased to find out that it was really good.
This could have been any of our picks, but
yeah,
we all liked it.
This is Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, which has maybe my favorite cover of the week, too. It's a beautiful cover.
Yeah.
Great use of, like, sort of a... white space, and it's the teenage Moon Girl, a new character who's been introduced.
But I like the reason they call her Moon Girl.
Right, yep. And I'll get to that in just a sec. And then a giant red Tyrannosaurus head, and she like looks like she's about to kiss him on the nose.
Yes.
It's both adorable, and I also love actually that depiction of Devil Dinosaur.
Yeah.
Just a real quick thing for those who don't know, Devil Dinosaur was a comic in the 70s that Jack Kirby did.
Yep.
That was set like in prehistoric times, and that sort of fantasy prehistoric times,
mm-hmm.
Yep. And had like a sort of a tribe of sort of, they were like Australopithecus. It was like, almost like apes, you know, that were like the what do they call them? The moon people or whatever,
yeah.
Or the moon
yep.
folk.
Yep.
And a moon boy was just a young, you know, like essentially a teenage one of them.
Yep.
And then they fought against like this dangerous tribe called like the killer folk.
Yep.
And at one point, he ended up through the means, various means, sort of this dinosaur became his ally.
Yep.
And they had adventures.
And the dinosaur was red because he was born in a volcano or something crazy like that.
The killer folk they tricked him and they like tried to burn him in this giant bonfire.
Okay.
Except it just made his armored skin red, as fire does.
Sure.
You all know that.
Yep.
It was the 70s.
Just a lot
more. but this, although this does reference that time period, she lives in modern times, this girl. She's a kind of geeky young African-American girl who's... What's her name?
Lunella. That's why they call her Moon Girl.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Luna.
But she's
Luna.
Very sort of...
She's
not the average person. She's
clearly a genius.
She's a genius. Doesn't
she's like
connect well with her... Sort of the kids around
sort
herself.
Sort of like when Peter Parker was young.
Yeah.
But almost a little bit more out of it than even he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, because the teachers like, don't like her either.
Yeah, she sort of spaces out,
yeah.
It seems like, and is like zones out.
Well, she wants to like the things she likes, and the things she doesn't like, she doesn't care about.
Well, because she's in science class, and they ask her about evolutionary theory, and she's basically doodling this design for a Cree detector.
Yeah.
And then when the teacher calls on her, because she clearly isn't paying attention, she rattles off all this stuff about it. Like, she knows it,
right.
But she doesn't care to express herself. This reminds me a lot of my daughter, by the way. So I connected pretty well to this character.
Your daughter should totally get a Moon Girl t-shirt. I don't want to like sort of give away quite how it all happens, although it's not like some huge mystery.
No, but it is cool.
But there are there's sort of ultimately you will end up seeing a little bit of time travel-ish element,
yeah.
As there are direct links to the past, to the original Moon Boy.
Yep.
And through sort of strange means that also have something to do with present day Lunella, Devil Dinosaur finds himself in the present along with the members of the Killer Folk tribe.
Yep.
And chaos breaks loose. But it's essentially, this is an origin story. You get a lot of her character and her kind of her smarts.
Yeah.
She's, I wonder, I bet we're going to see a lot of people cosplaying as her. Even
oh, yeah, totally.
Her hair is, I think, what will set it apart.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, she's just a girl. She doesn't have a costume or anything yet. She may at some point. Although I kind of hope she's just... It's sort of like the Runaways. Basically, it's just street clothes.
Yeah. I mean, she's got a devil dinosaur. She doesn't need anything else.
That's true. Yeah. I guess if you were cosplaying...
You'd need a devil dinosaur.
You need somebody to come in one of those big Jurassic Park inflatable costumes. And it has to be redded yeah. up. Yeah. Actually, that would be amazing.
I got to say, who's the artist on this?
So, the artist is new to me, Natasha Bustos.
Yeah, I don't know the artist either.
But I really like it.
Oh, the art's gorgeous.
Sort of like Javier Pulido.
Yeah. And, it also reminds me of what Adrian Alfano's doing on Miss Marvel somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. I think people who are liking Miss Marvel in general, is an obvious kind of companion book.
If you like Miss Marvel, you're going to like this book.
And in addition, I would say it's great for teenagers or probably preteens who often like to read the comics about teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
Who wrote this one?
Right. And the writer is Brendan Montclair and Amy Reeder. Mm-hmm. So Amy Reeder did...
She's an artist. She did work on Madame Xanadu.
Yeah, with Matt Wagner.
She's done a few other things as well.
She's done some stuff where she wrote and drew, but I don't remember anything off the top of my head. But this is her first thing as a writer only, I believe.
So, basically, for me, the whole creative team was largely, though, a blank.
Pretty new, yeah.
And so I think because of that, I was a little bit cautious. I didn't have anything that I to rely on in it. So I was very, very happy to see that this is it's a great origin issue. With a lot of likable characters.
In a single issue, they've created a brand new character of the Marvel Universe that I think will stick.
I do too. I think this is a pretty good character.
And also, I like it because it's a callback to a cult property.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Because how long did Kirby's Devil Dinosaur run?
Might have done like 20 or 30 issues tops.
Yeah.
Because in those days, books that were even the weird stuff sometimes lasted a few years.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like canceled in 8 issues.
Well, this was all collected in one hardcover collection. So it's like...
Right.
It's like 9 or 10. It's not very much.
It might have actually been the equivalent of a current day short thing. And yet somehow Devil Dinosaur remained, probably, I mean, because of the Kirby. Because
he's a Kirby big red dinosaur.
Yeah. Has remained in the conscious, comic book consciousness. There was an old comic called Fallen Angels in like late 80s,
Yep.
That had Devil Dinosaur and Moon Boy in it. Some kind of time travel.
There's a lot of time traveling for them, yeah.
And then periodically they have shown up since. Any number of times, honestly. I keep expecting the property to just go away
forever. Devil Dinosaur showed up in Next Wave. Also, we got it in Secret Wars, the Planet Hulk stuff.
Yeah.
So,
this is probably going to become the default version.
I think
is that it does homage the original, while, you know, clearly they, you know, introducing a new character.
Yep.
That is my pick. I was happy to find it was even better than I expected it would be.
Nick, what's your pick?
It's another Marvel book, so get ready for that. This is actually Venom Space Knight #1. Back when we were doing our previous picks, I figured that I might like this one because it's Robbie Thompson who writes Silk.
Yep.
And he sort of brings the same sort of level of craft that he does with Silk to the Venom character. And this Venom character is Flash Thompson.
When last we saw him, he was...
part of the Guardians of the Galaxy. Yep. And apparently there were some big things that occurred in Bendis' run of the Guardians of the Galaxy to actual Flash Thompson and the symbiote itself.
Right.
So... the symbiote is no longer, like, angry or wrathful. It's taken that sort of hostility out of it.
Symbiote.
So it is sort of more of a chill, and it can actually operate with him much more easily. And this is actually Flash, when he's not working with the Guardians, he has become sort of this champion for people across the cosmos.
That is a bit of a jump even from the Guardians to become hero at that level.
Well, it's not sort of something that he knows he is. He's had this title thrust upon him, and he's sort of just going on missions when he is sort of told about them. There's some cool stuff I'm not going to sort of mention as to how it happens.
That's art's really nice.
Yeah, the artist is Errol Olivetti.
It's essentially painted artwork.
Yeah.
He's been around, he's done things like... I remember him working on a Cable book.
Yeah, Cable's one of the things he did early on.
He did a Space Ghost comic back
That's
in the
right.
day. It was a sort of a more serious Space Ghost.
He also did like an Avengers story, like the last Avengers
story. The last Avengers story with Peter David, yep.
Yeah,
he's a good painter.
He's a very good painter. And he gets to draw some really cool alien species because this is about Flash kind of infiltrating a person who is trying to smuggle out a weapons-grade sort of poison. And, of course, interesting things... occur. He meets a few people that might become secondary players in his own story, and it's just kind of interesting to see the Venom symbiote used in such a way. I've liked when Remender made Flash Thompson kind of the military guy. Yep. Seeing him elevated to the cosmic level didn't quite make sense, but I'm liking it more that Robbie Thompson is involved in sort of bringing his kind of level-headedness and sort of his craft.
What is Flash's personality these days? I mean, he was always, well, you know, of course he was the bully back in Peter Parker's high school days.
He's evolved.
I think he's just like a military man.
As far back in the 70s, as like the 70s, yeah, when he went off and like, he was in Vietnam as originally.
He's military, he has some problems, I mean, mental issues, but he's sort of overcome
all that. Like PTSD
kind of stuff? PTSD stuff, I remember that, because he did lose his legs during that, and
I mean, that's the whole reason, the thing that set up the initial thing, that the Venom suit essentially could simulate that.
Yeah, Dave, now he was in Afghanistan, I think. Or maybe Iraq.
Yeah.
But now he's pretty much a kind of calm guy. He's got some anger issues, of course.
Does he have the hero gene in it, you know, the way that Captain America does?
Maybe not there yet. He's still got some flashisms that
he's bullying.
He does. Yes. He does if you read Spider Island.
But I will say there's some cool stuff where he utilizes some football maneuvers like in his escapades.
That's kind
of
fun.
Is a lot of fun.
We're like both an homage to himself and Flash Gordon of 1980.
Yeah. Anyways, I found it to be a lot of fun. Kind of reminding me of like Venom Lethal Protector in some ways.
No, Nick, no. Don't.
Do you not have a fondness for Venom Lethal Protector?
No, why would I?
I guess you have to be that age. Because I had all of those. But yes, now that is my pick. Randy, what is yours?
My pick is not a Marvel pick.
What?
It is.
Because you're going to get around to it with your cheater pick.
With my cheater pick, yeah.
Okay.
But this has been my favorite comic and still is Saga number 31. We've been getting questions, a lot of people like, when's the next Saga starting? Well, it starts now. This is the new arc. It picks up a few months after we saw them last. I don't want to give anything away because I know you guys are way behind on Saga.
I read in those giant
But all I will say is that we're starting to see Hazel, the girl, their baby, become more of a character. She is at least, I would guess, somewhere between six.
Is she still the narrator of the story?
She's still the narrator, but we're also now seeing her. She's probably like 6 years old, 5 years old, something like that. She's talking.
Long time period.
Yeah, she's talking. She's she's more of a she's in school, all that kind of thing.
Okay.
And there are revelations about why she's in school and where she is and that kind of thing. Oh, I'm sorry. She's four, as shown by this birthday cupcake that has a four on it.
Okay.
Which seems like she's a pretty advanced 4 year old, honestly.
But it's crazy. It's space.
That's crazy space. And there's all the stuff you've come to love with Saga, which is, means
foul-mouthed
humor, violence, nudity, and there's introduced their first
moral questions.
They introduced their first trans character, which I thought was interesting and was done pretty well. I'm really liking this book. It continues to be great. If you're not reading Saga, you're missing my favorite comic.
You know what?
Come by the first trade.
I saw some interview with Alan Moore recently, who is generally not known for sort of keeping up on the pulse of the comics industry.
I remember this interview.
And I don't remember what all else he mentioned, but if I'm not mistaken, am I right, Nick? Didn't he cite Saga as one of the things he thought was really amazing?
This is one of his favorite books, along with Wicked and Divine and Uber.
And then he cast a spell and vanished in a puff of smoke.
Well, that's true.
There is one thing. There's a letters column in Saga, which he gets a letter from a guy in the Tennessee prison who talks about his dad seeing him the Saga Volume 1 trade or the hardcover, and that he's like, none of the guys here read comics and graphic novels, but they've all fallen for Saga. And I'm just amused by that picture of like all these inmates falling in love with the Saga collection.
You know, based on the first panel in the first issue of Saga, if I'm not mistaken, that's when she's given birth, right?
Yeah.
Very foul-mouthed birthing process.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine how inmates would pick that up and get an instant laugh out of it.
Yeah,
though, you know,
yeah.
And obviously there's more to it than just the crudeness of it.
Yeah,
but it's going to be a decent hook.
yeah. But 31 issues in, still great, and I'm looking forward to where this story goes. My cheater pick is a Marvel comic.
Uh huh. We'd come around.
It's a Silk number one. Yay. This is a relaunch of the book. It's Robbie Thompson writing, Stacey Lee on art.
She came and visited us.
Yes.
Yay.
Stacey Lee has friend of the store status.
Yes, it's true.
And the twist, of course, if you didn't know it, is that Silk is working for Black Cat.
Yep, this was there was a in the brief preview in Amazing Spider-Man number one. This was glimpsed.
Yeah. There's also some funny stuff. I forgot the running gag that J. Jonah Jameson. She works for JJ's like media company.
Yeah, news media.
And he calls her Analog because she's like backwards technology stuff.
Oh, right.
And that's like his code name for her. But he kind of likes her in the same way he liked Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. He gives her a hard time, but he clearly has a fondness for her.
Right.
And he loves Silk. Which I think is hilarious. Yes. JJ loves Silk and won't believe that she's gone bad.
Now, why does he like her? I thought he was always kind of broadly anti-vigilant.
I don't know. There was a reason something happened where he
saved her or saved JJ's.
No, that wouldn't matter because Spidey saved JJ like 100 times.
Right. Well, but it would have been if she like saved his business or something like that.
Yeah. Anyway, they also one of my favorite things. Mockingbird shows up and gets in a fight with her. I love Mockingbird. I'm super happy that she's showing up here and in Spider-Man. And
I have to say, the new costume she's got is pretty cool looking.
It's all right.
You don't like the mask?
I like Mockingbird's classic costume.
I didn't know she had a new costume.
Yeah, it's a little more heavily... there's a little more white than black in it.
Okay.
Hold it up.
I want to see
it. All right. There it is.
All right. This is great radio.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Anyway, it's a good costume, but I like her. I like her classic, and I like the one they did when she came back and was working with Hawkeye.
The classic
again.
Costume from a year ago.
I feel like it's very close to the one when she came back. It's just got an actual mask instead of goggles.
It's all right. I like the goggles. I don't know. I've every iteration of Mockingbird's costume gets further away from what I liked about the original.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
I thought you were talking about Silk.
No, Mockingbird.
Gotcha.
Silk's got her just regular costume.
Yeah, Silk's got the same costume. Mockingbird has a new costume. I don't want to give away. There is another twist that shows up at the end of this, which made me very happy and very much invested in reading the rest of this book. So if you've been reading it, it continues along the same vein. She's looking for her family since she was in a vault for a long time. And clearly the Black Cat is part of that goal. If you've not been reading it, then yeah, it's a story of a young girl with Spider-Man's powers who is working with villains or working with Black Cat at any rate.
All right,
Nick, what you got?
Another Marvel book for my cheater pick.
Cheater pick.
actually, this is no big surprise. I picked number one as my pick a few weeks ago. So. All New Wolverine number two.
Yep.
Just as good, if not a little bit better than the first one.
Yeah, really good.
Because the story's coming into focus a little bit more.
Yeah.
We understand why Laura is involved with what she was doing in the first one.
Yep. A little more of a reveal about those bad guys.
Yep, the bad guy reveal is actually great.
Yep.
The art.
And Alchemax is involved.
Alchemax is involved, so cool Spider-Man 2099.
Dave had forgotten that Alchemax had been introduced in the Marvel Universe.
I had read those issues of Superior Spider-Man, so I didn't know about it. But I kind of like, you know, whereas I think with, like, when they would sometimes drop in hints of Kingdom Come, I mean, I guess that made sense in the universe.
It was,
but I think because I didn't, like, particularly like Kingdom Come,
mm-hmm.
or didn't like it as much as other people had.
Well, I think was the interesting thing about it was because when Slott introduced Alchemax, it wasn't run by, like, Villainous. It was run by somebody that Peter was friends with.
It's Liz Allen.
Right. Well, specifically, the name Alchemax was an amalgamation.
It's Allen, yeah. It's Allen Chemical and something else. I don't remember
what it
is.
Right, and I was like, oh, that's very clever.
Yeah, I thought that was really clever.
And it's a neat lead-in to, you know, the big... Megacorp of the 2099 universe.
Yeah. Well, it's still run by Liz Allen. It's just that she's become a little bit
sketchy.
Ruthless and sketchy.
Yes.
Yeah,
but yeah, this actually opens up with her sort of Laura visiting Alchemax and sort of finding out a few things, and then becomes sort of an action adventure throughout. And there's some great artwork in this.
You know, I've always thought that Logan should be action espionage is kind of his best solo default mode.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're doing here with Laura, and I think it works perfectly well.
Tom Taylor's doing some great stuff. David Lopez's artwork.
Tom Taylor. I was flipping through it. If we were talking about doing a list of our top artists maybe or something.
He's up there.
There's a high likelihood he would be in my top five right
now.
Well, there's a few things that I thought were phenomenal. His action scenes are great. I really like seeing the height differentiates between Laura and a bunch of the other characters.
Mm-hmm.
Even between some of the villains, which there's a reason why it's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
She's actually a little bit bigger than they are, but compared to a lot of people, she feels like the size Logan should
be. She's shorter.
Short. Yeah. And she's awesome, and she can kick your ass like no one else. But no, I really found this to be a fun issue. There is a great sort of capper to it that I will never spoil, but made me very, very happy. So yeah, I love this
Flipping
book.
Through the last page, I can see why.
Dave, your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is from Image, not Marvel. You whores.
Why'd you pick an Image book? Why didn't you be Marvel?
I was paid off Marvel. So this is the second issue of Black Magic, Greg Rucka's cop witch sort of comic. There's the lead detective, or lead character in it is a detective named, I think, Rowan White, I think is her name. Mm-hmm. And in the previous issue, her, rather entertainingly, her coven meeting, like, out in the woods was interrupted when her cell phone went off.
Right.
And she was called into a weird case. At that point, the book became sort of a procedural and continues to be. There's a weird hostage situation that involved someone who clearly wanted to draw out her specifically and kind of knew about her dabblings in magic. And slowly, as of the second issue and even in the first, we're starting to see exactly what that entails for her. She's, you know, clearly this is a world where there is real magic of some sorts. Mm-hmm. She's aware of it. Most people are not. And as this issue continues, so the hostage taker in the first issue died. And the procedural side of this has the follow-up stuff. You know, you basically, you're like taken off active duty whenever there's a cop involved in, you know, in a killing. And they, you know, they question you, they interrogate you. The guy, there's interesting forensic stuff that's brought into it. Like his lighter has a symbol on it that's a...
it's like a hammer.
It's like, yeah, it's like a hammer and... There's some interesting detective work going on. She's kind of playing like, oh, she's almost like throwing out red herrings and stuff. Like she doesn't really know about magic. And there's another detective in here who he seems to be picking up on it. He knows more than at least she is pretending she doesn't. I don't know if that made sense at all.
Nope.
anyway, this guy clearly has some knowledge. I don't know if he's supposed to be a guy who actually has some ties. Or is just smart enough that he might be picking up on what she's kind of trying to cover.
I believe he will be a warlock.
That'd be cool.
By the way, Dave, if this were the 70s, this book would either have to be called White Magic, or her last name would have to be Rowan Black.
Interesting you say that. Have you read it yet?
No.
Her name has a bearing on the issue.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, I think Rucka just brings a level of detail to this. You know, it feels very real, like his Queen and Country did. And,
yep. It's almost first and foremost a procedural book,
yep.
And like in this gross page I just flipped to with the really stunningly rendered artwork from, what's her name?
Nicola Scott.
There's a drowned body that's been pulled up by the bay, and they're trying to figure out cause of death. Did he drown before? Was he killed before he drowned? Or, I mean, was before the body sunk? Anyway, it's a slowly unraveling mystery that's, you know, it's kind of unusual to have as your mystery, not something the character is trying to find out, but just who she is.
Mm-hmm.
And that runs a risk of like, oh, I don't feel like I can get close to the character. But you see enough of her in this and through her conversations, including this sort of more extended conversation with somebody else from her coven. You're definitely, he's not holding back on answers. Anyway, I continue to be intrigued, and Rucka is, as you noted, because of Queen and Country, because of his novels, he is very good at the procedural stuff. So, that's my cheater pick, Black Magic, number 2.
All right. Well, that about wraps up our comics talk for this week. Oh, no, it doesn't, because we've got...
Yeah.
That's right.
I was going to be like, we've got
everything else we read this week. That's right. Okay.
We're gonna do this, so,
Dave, do you want to go first, real quick?
Yeah, Dave, you go first.
Sure. I think y'all already stole most of the stuff, so the handful of things that are left are the fourth issue of Archie, which this one notably marks the first appearance of the new artist,
yeah,
Annie Wu, who is replacing Fiona Staples.
You might know from Hawkeye.
What is that?
Hawkeye.
She Annie worked Wu on from Hawkeye. Yeah, Fiona Staples is from Sarah.
Yeah, Fiona Staples from Sarah.
And it's a style that is not dissimilar to Fiona Staples. So if you've been enjoying the Archie relaunch so far, you will find this very approachable.
And if you haven't, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, you should really check it out. It's super funny and good and, like, you know, alternately funny and occasionally kind of heartfelt.
Yeah.
Anyway, This issue is has a lot of flashbacks in it and yep. reveals how Archie kind of found himself on the outs with Betty, which, you know, that sounds really kind of trite. But as depicted, there is a little bit more insight into sort of relationships and the small things that add up and go wrong.
Brings a little
bit
more to it.
Yeah, it is not just a, you know, you embarrassed me at prom, I hate you. There's more to it than that, and it continues to have that sort of John Hughesian vibe of mixing humor and a little bit of drama.
Like you, Dave, I want Mark Waid to stay on this book for as long as humanly possible.
He set a great tone on it, and I want him to continue with it. Also, the third issue, although I've not read it yet, the third issue of Wild's End, the anthropomorphic sort of sci-fi War of the Worlds type comic set in like the late 1800s. I've been enjoying all the previous issues, so I'm looking forward to this one. And then there's a trade paperback that's hitting this week of The Flash by Jeff Johns.
This is a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a big old trade paperback, although for $24.99 it actually seems quite reasonable for it.
Yeah.
The first two arcs?
It's the first two arcs.
Yeah, it's essentially, it looks like they're going to be reprinting his full run, and since, for my money, it's pretty much the best Flash run of modern times.
The only Flash run I think is even in competition with is Mark Waid's.
Because the first one. Does it have the Iron Heights?
Yeah,
stuff?
It has Iron Heights in it, which was a special,
really good
with Ethan Van Shriver on art.
Yep.
Yeah, there's three artists on this because Scott Collins did most of the art for this run.
And the first part of the art, though, I'm not wild about.
Really? Isn't that Angel and Zweta?
Probably.
I like that art.
It's good.
I mean, it's not Scott Collins, but...
He does the Wonderland thing, doesn't he?
I think because I came in on Scott Collins' run, and I actually have... I don't know if I've read all of these issues.
See, I started with his run, with Jeff Johns' very first issue.
Yeah.
So, and it's like an alternate universe where... I don't know exactly what's going on, but like the villains have taken over or something. And I remember really liking that story. It was my first exposure to Jeff Johns' writing.
I think it deals with Pied Piper.
And I really liked it. And then when Scott Collins comes on, it just like takes a jump.
Yeah.
Oh, Collins put a stamp on all those characters. Those are the versions of the characters that I love. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah, I believe this somewhere in this issue and among these ones, there's an issue that has, I think, the Weather Wizard in it. That was the first one that I read, and I just loved that issue.
This trade has Captain Cold, Weather Wizard, Mirror Master,
Pied Piper.
Well, we've talked about the fact that sadly the main ongoing Flash comic right now is not so great.
It's a little lackluster.
And when you've got a TV show as good as The Flash is, you really want the comic to be riding high right there.
Yep.
I mean, Johns is involved in the TV show to some degree, right?
Yeah, he is.
I mean, if you like,
he's written episodes. Yeah.
If you've liked anything you've seen on the television series, this is a run to go to.
This is the book we wish was coming out right now for Flash.
Yes. And may get my pick of the week on it as far as I think my
in-store pick,
which may mean a discount for you card
holders. If you have a rogue card, that means you can get 10% off it this week.
Yep. So anyway, those are my little side picks. What else y'all got?
Nick?
I've got a new Image book that I haven't had a chance to read, but I want to, about wrestling, called Ringside. I'm sure if Amanda was in here, she would tell you all about
it. She might bust in here and hit the chairs.
I did just a little flipping through it, and I found it was a little bit more on that, like, the wrestler side of it. You know, is that Darren Aronofsky?
Yeah, no, it was, or was it Darren Aronofsky? I don't know.
Who did Black Swan? Oh,
that's
Aronofsky, right?
Yeah, it is.
That's it. So more on the serious side of things. Not like a larger-than-life look at wrestling, necessarily.
Then the second issue of Carnage, which continues to see Carnage be very carnagey and killing a lot of people.
Sure.
But also has a fun cameo by Eddie Brock, which I think is cool. Newest issue of Grayson, which I haven't read.
I forgot Grayson.
But as always, Grayson is an amazing book. Thank you, Tim Seeley, for continuing it. And Tom King. I'm sorry. I always forget.
Yeah, but Tom King writes other books that aren't so good, so...
Yeah, I know, but he still wants thanks.
That's true. Tim Seeley is bringing the Wildstorm universe into the DC universe, and he's making it work.
Yeah.
I feel like Seeley's the guy writing Grayson, and every so often Tom King's like, you know, spies carry guns.
And he's like, oh, right, okay. Thanks.
Because he's the spy guy.
Yeah. He is the spy guy.
Which means I shouldn't say bad things about him because he's probably listening right now.
Yeah. He's going to kill you.
You heard him. He spoke just a minute ago asking for credit.
That's right. He's going to just drop in the ceiling like Tom Cruise style.
And break your neck and then just retract.
Yep.
And then the second issue of the new Guardians of the Galaxy book, which Surprisingly, I really enjoyed the first one. I liked seeing both Kitty Pryde.
It was a surprise to find Nick enjoying a Marvel comic.
No, it's a surprise that Bendis is writing two major books at Marvel at the moment. I'm liking both of them.
Yeah.
That's.
But what would be really surprising is if I liked them.
That's true. You won't read them. So.
He can't.
But I like seeing the Thing in on sort of the cosmic level and Kitty Pryde as well, surprisingly. So I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
All right.
You know, before you go, Randy.
Yes, go ahead. Yeah, please interrupt.
Talking about Bendis, the other week I caught up and read that Uncanny X-Men number 600 he wrote, and found it surprisingly enjoyable, because I, like you, generally don't like the Bendis. So I recommend it. It's a kind of a nice capper to, I guess, his run and the... pre-Secret Wars overhaul stuff.
I don't like Bendis in the same way I don't like Deadpool, which is to say, I don't understand what you people see in them.
How much Bendis would you say you own in your collection, Randy?
A lot. Because I used to like Bendis a lot.
Yep. Just saying.
I think we all own a lot of
Bendis. I also own Deadpool, so...
Yeah. No, you don't. I think you sold it all.
Oh, that's true. I owned Deadpool. okay, so the rest of my read, Vertigo has a new book called Jacked, that has sort of photorealistic art by John Higgins, and is written by Supernatural co-creator Eric Kripke. This is sort of a Mark Millar-esque look at what happens when this guy gets his hands on sort of Limitless-style drugs that give him superpowers, and along with acid flashbacks. He's a schlubby married guy with a kid. His life is going down the crapper. He's been laid off. All this kind of stuff. His kid's embarrassed by him. And then he gets these drugs, and all of a sudden he gets to be the hero he's wanted to be, and I'm sure it will go to dark places. It's familiar territory. Like, you've definitely seen Mark Miller do this kind of thing before. But I kind of like the first issue. I'll probably read and see where they go from here. It's a six-issue mini, I
like Kripke, so...
Yeah. So, interesting first issue. Second issue of Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, which... I liked the first issue of this back, but I wasn't in love with it. I thought, oh, maybe the charm of this is worn off. No, it turns out the charm is not worn off because the second issue involves time travel and is hilarious and fun, and I'm really enjoying
Doom
it.
Doom is upon the cover,
and Dr. Doom is in it. Darth Vader, second part of Vader Down, is in Darth Vader number 13, wherein Darth Vader takes on a whole bunch of rebel troops, and it goes about as you'd expect.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Luke is out there trying to find him. Han and Leia have sort of a confrontation about whether they're going to find Vader or try to help Luke. And
the suicidal droids of Vader.
And the evil droids get some great moments.
Yes,
so,
they do.
The newest issue of Chew, number 52, which we're closing in on the end. The penultimate issue of The Fade Out, the noir 50s story by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. And then a bunch of trades this week. Unbeatable Squirrel Girl Volume 2, titled Squirrel You Know It's True, which collects 5 through 8 of the original series of Squirrel Girl.
That's a oblique Millie Vanilli.
It is, yeah.
Specifically.
Yep.
Nice.
Spider-Gwen, which collects the Edge of Spider-Verse number 2 and Spider-Gwen 1 through 5. It seems crazy there's not been a Spider-Gwen trade before this, but there hasn't been. Now it's all collected.
I need to catch up, because I didn't finish reading that series, but I'm caught up on the new series.
Oh, yeah.
And I've really liked the new series.
Yeah. 1872, they were starting to collect all the Secret War stuff, and this was the one that we all liked. It was sort of the Western tale.
Western Marvel.
Also features an old reprint of a Red Wolf story, which is kind of weird. But
just because
not that weird.
He's the main character.
And then finally, The Kitchen is collected from Vertigo. This is the story of 70s Hell's Kitchen, gangsters' wives who take over the Irish mob.
Is it the full story?
It is the full story. I really liked this series.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. And I never got around to reading the end of it, but I liked the first couple and said, oh, when the trade comes out, I'm going to read this whole thing. And that is comics for the week, right?
Wait, nothing else?
Is that it?
Actually, there is one thing.
Oh!
More Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, yeah, Batman Animated Series.
They apparently decided to put all the waves out before Christmas, so
yep.
Hooray for people who love Batman the Animated
yep.
Series. This week we see who? We've got
Scarecrow,
Matt Hatter. Scarecrow,
Nightwing,
and Bane.
And Bane, yep.
And they're all, of course... Awesome. Fantastic looking.
Yep, really cool. Super articulated. I have all of them. Also, we do have most of them in stock. There's a couple that aren't available, but
right.
We have most of them in stock. And we do have the Batmobile in stock.
We do have the Batmobile.
So if you're looking for something to bump your Black Friday total up, and a really awesome Christmas present.
If you know a person who just loves that series and you're like, wonder what I could get them.
I can't imagine anyone who's a Batman fan not opening that and squealing with girlish glee.
That's true. I had a couple who, they bought it for themselves and they were putting it under the tree.
Uh-huh.
And they weren't going to open it until Christmas. And I'm like,
that's crazy talk.
How could you not? I can't understand that.
Randy, I don't remember what customer it was, but some customer was in on Sunday and we were talking with him.
Yeah.
And he was asking about the Batmobile and looking at the box up there. And I was saying that it was like, he was asking how much it was, I think. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's $100. But I was like, when I actually saw it, I was like, this was worth it.
Yep.
And so we ran Nick and we fished out yours and
turned on the lights.
Yeah, and yep. I was like, it really does make a world of difference. Like the packaging is nice and everything in that, but when you see that thing, it looks like it's like bigger than the box showed.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy.
anyway, so
that is all.
That is all for comics this week.
I guess.
We'll be back after a short break to discuss my twin obsessions of Jessica Jones and Star Wars Battlefront. All right, so we're going to be talking about Netflix's newest show, Jessica Jones, which was 13 episodes. Came out on Friday?
Yes, it was Friday.
So it's only been like 5 days. I'm going to do my best not to spoil everything, but if you're super spoiler sensitive, you might want to skip ahead to our Star Wars Battlefront talk, or if that sounds horrible, you could just cut the podcast off here.
Yo,
enjoy
Joe.
Our – Yo, Joe. enjoy your Thanksgiving. Anyway, so Jessica Jones. And again, I'm going to go spoiler light, but we will spoil a few things.
Yeah.
So you have seen four episodes?
I've seen four episodes.
Dave, you've seen two?
Just two.
And I finished up last night.
Yep.
I really like the first half.
Okay.
Like, really love the first half of this show. And then the second half, I felt like there was a lot of controversy to keep her from just killing the Purple Man.
Where Daredevil was concerned, we powered through that entire season in one day.
Yeah.
I don't think I could power through Jessica Jones in one day.
It's darker.
It's much darker.
Some heavy stuff.
Yeah, and it's creepy. That first episode was ended on such a note that I was like, oh, okay.
Well, and then it gets darker because I was watching it with a friend of mine. You were there for part of it, but then I watched another friend for a little while. And as we started to figure out what happened to Reva.
Yeah.
I saw it coming before it happened.
Oh, really?
And I'm like,
who's Reva?
Luke Cage's ex-wife.
Yeah, it's okay.
And when it started to lay out, I was like, she's way more guilty than just she was there when a bus hit her.
Yeah.
And I'm like, something happened. And then when the reveal came, I was like, oh, yeah. And that sort of goes back and explains a lot of her relationship with Luke Cage,
yep.
Played by Mike Coulter, who, by the way, the casting on this thing was fantastic.
Coulter does a great job as Luke.
Coulter is great as Luke Cage.
So
Kristen Ritter is great as Jessica Jones, and I was a little skeptical of whether she could carry it, but she's great.
Well, you told me she had a really good run on Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And
I'm still mildly skeptical of what I've seen of her. For some reason, she just was not fully clicking for me.
Oh, I really liked her as Jessica Jones.
I felt like she was more like sort of playing at being kind of somebody who was a bit of a burnout, and I didn't quite.
Oh, I totally bought into it.
I bought into it.
I also thought David Tennant as Kilgrave was great.
I still haven't seen him much.
Really? Oh, that's right. He's a little early.
He's just a
sort of a background presence.
Yeah.
Well, and he shows up for the biggest part of the second episode.
Yeah.
At the end.
Yeah, he shows up at the end, but
I watched him
as sort of a stinger.
Yeah, he goes. Well, he doesn't go to the apartment with that guy and his kids.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
and sort of puts kids in the closet.
Yep.
Yeah, it's very disturbing.
And there's a lot of that. That's one of the things that goes on is that, and Alan Sepinwall wrote a great review of it where he reviewed the first six, and he was like, "This is a great show, I loved it." And then he just reviewed the back half, and he's like, "It's good, but it has its flaws." And I think I'm very much in the same mind. One of the things he mentioned is that Kilgrave getting away with atrocities becomes a little wearisome, especially if you're marathoning.
Yeah.
Like, because he just causes people to do horrible things to each other, and there's no payback for that. There's really not any – Jessica doesn't save people. That's not her thing. She's trying to bring him down, but there's a lot of people that get hurt, and there's just no reparations here. This is not a superhero show. This is a noir show.
Well, I've probably mentioned it even – I know y'all have heard me mention this, but maybe even on the podcast – It was a comment that a friend of mine made after seeing Unbreakable, a movie I generally like, but which is very dark tone to it, which was that the sort of home invasion sequence was sort of so disturbing to him that any sort of, you know, awe or, you know, excitement he'd feel about, like, oh, there really are superheroes among us, was completely overwhelmed by that disturbing sequence.
Oh, someone might break in and murder me. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that...
And so it sounds like, you know, and of course, that the movie didn't have just one tone. It wasn't clearly just a superhero
movie. Yeah, yeah.
And this is not a just full-on superhero thing. So I can understand them doing it, but yes, it's not a...
I think it's very minimally a superhero.
This is much more a noir than anything else. That is what
it is. I mean, did they ever really harken... I mean, this is a question for you.
Yeah.
Right? She and Luke Cage have a superhero team up and beat people up in a bar.
That was a great fight scene, by the way.
I always say really kind of as a joke.
But do they allude to her superheroing at all?
Luke Cage asked her if she ever tried the costume thing, and he says, like, said something like, please say you did. And then she says something, slightly vague.
She was never Jewel.
Okay.
I know, because they do make a reference. They show the Jewel costume, like, Patsy's trying to talk her into it.
Oh, did they? Okay.
And it's sort of, they made the goofiest Halloween-looking version of it, but it is the Jewel costume.
Okay.
And she actually suggests the name Jewel, which Jessica poo-poos. Okay. So it is more like they did in the first couple scenes of Arrow, where someone would suggest Green Arrow, and that's the nod, and everyone's like, oh, no, that's stupid.
Right.
So it was kind of that, which it wouldn't make sense in this show to show her as Jewel. And she doesn't fly. She does the sort of leaping kind of thing.
Yeah,
right.
But also, Patsy Walker was great casting.
I was going to say, the inclusion of Patsy Walker, which I think they've gone on record and say it was supposed to be Carol Danvers.
They were into Carol Danvers, and then the movie stuff interfered, which is probably for the best, because Melissa Rosenberg, the showrunner, said, I think it works better having a character who does not have superpowers as her best friend.
Right.
And I agree. I agree. Think in the comic, Carol being her best friend worked great. In the show, I think having Patsy as this sort of – they were sort of sisters. They grew up adopted.
Well, and they call her Trish.
Call her Trish because Patsy was her kid name, and she wants to distance herself from
it. Which I think both of us in the first episode were like, is that Trish Tilby? Is that where they're going?
But then you quickly
– Trish Tilby is a sporty character from X-Men.
Yeah, X-Factor.
Yeah.
She was an Asian journalist, but she's a journalist, and she was a radio show, so we thought maybe, but no, it's Trish Walker. Also, they bring in a cop, which I don't think Dave has seen yet.
The cop is very interesting.
That story, and I don't want to give too much away, but the cop's last name is Simpson, and don't go Googling around if you don't want to know who it is, because that's a notable character that they introduced, and it was kind of a weird character to bring into Jessica Jones, but it's going to pay off in Defenders.
I've met that character, and I don't even recognize it. So
yeah, you will the second that character says a certain line, you'll be like, oh, it's that guy.
I believe I know who this is based on one of our customers, Jose, asked me. He's like, hey, who does that mean anything to you? And I was like, I know who
yeah,
it is.
It is. It's one of those lines you're like, oh, it's that guy. But it doesn't come to like episode 8 or 9.
Yeah.
So it's a spoiler and I won't drop it.
And you're correct. It is an odd addition.
It works though.
But not super odd because there's been ties to some of the other characters. Yeah. Another character who she might
also have associations with. And this is a thing that's left hangling for season 2,
uh-huh.
which they've said may happen after Defenders.
Yeah.
But later on, they never really do a lot of origin stuff. They do get into Kilgrave's origin a little bit later, and they sort of nod at Jessica's origin, which in the comics I don't remember.
Yeah,
I think it is the same origin in that she's in a car crash with her family and she survives, and some of the car crash gives her powers.
Yeah.
And basically something to do with a mysterious corporation called IGH, which if you read Bendis' Daredevil run and Alias, you can figure out what IGH probably stands for. If you haven't, you won't know, but it's an interesting stand-in. I was like, interesting
because it does bridge a gap between the Netflix shows and
S.H.I.E.L.D. at least.
ABC show.
Yeah.
ABC?
Yeah. Yeah, which I thought was interesting because it was this mysterious company that their anagram, they're like, when they looked it up, I'm like, oh, it doesn't stand for anything. I'm like, oh, it stands for something. But that was interesting.
Yeah. They did reference even just in the first episode or two with the Avengers.
Yeah,
obliquely they didn't call the Avengers.
Well, she's in Hell's Kitchen just like Daredevil was.
Yeah.
I think
I would have liked some reference to Daredevil because
I would have loved that
if
too.
He is some sort of like, I mean, doing that much stuff in Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah,
I think she would have been like.
And this is
in
post
the background.
This is post Daredevil episode 13 does get into it a little bit
because even. Even if Why am I blanking on her name? The one who's stand-in for the gender swapped character.
Jerry.
Carrie
Ann Moss as Jaren Hogarth.
Right. If she had mentioned
that character that we know...
Jaren Hogarth was Iron Fist's attorney. He's always been a little sleazy, but... She's an interesting character they brought in. And I think one of the reasons they didn't have Matt Murdock, because in Alias, Matt Murdock was the guy who was hiring Jessica.
Yep.
Right.
But he was the lawyer who hired her as an investigator. But because... Jerry is the lawyer here. She's the one hiring Jessica.
And it made sense.
There's also a weird subplot with Jerry and her. She's philandering with her assistant and just got an ex-wife or a wife who finds out about it. And that's a weird subplot. All the subplots are a little odd. It does.
Okay.
It definitely does. It's just – it's really odd, some of the side stuff. And because the thing is, Dave, you said before this all started that it seemed a little – you were not sure about them using the Purple Man as like the focus of the whole series.
Right.
And I think that's the problem is that – we didn't in the comics. They spent some time on some other cases.
Roughly each six issues was a different case.
Yeah, I mean,
like three cases, and then they did.
They made heavy reference to her being a heavy drinker and sort of a damaged personality, and something had happened to her. Yeah. But instead of like going right into the Purple Man stuff, like we were left with that as a mystery, and she had a case involving secret identities, and someone was going to leak everybody's secret identities.
Yeah, specifically and then, Cap.
Yeah, specifically Cap. And then she had another case with like a missing persons and all this kind of stuff. And instead, they just dive right into the Purple Man stuff. Yeah. And as a result, it's got to carry 13 episodes of narrative weight. I'm not sure there's 13 episodes there.
You know, one thing that occurs to me is all those other cases involved the Marvel Universe heavily.
Yeah, yeah.
One was because the girl who was gone missing was somebody who, you know, might or might not have been a mutant.
Yeah.
They can't touch
on.
They
can't do.
Although they could touch on inhuman type stuff, maybe. I don't know what's going on with that in S.H.I.E.L.D.
They did
a storyline that had Rick Jones in it.
And yeah, that's right. And they can't do that either.
They could have
made different versions of it. I wish they had tried a little harder to do a PI in the Marvel Universe instead of a PI confronted by a sort of a definite rape analog.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I really think was an unfortunate choice, I'm kind of surprised from a female showrunner, is that in the comics Kilgrave never touched her physically.
Right.
Here they absolutely changed that was part of what was going on. And I thought that was a weird choice to make. Now, they never show it. They don't really do it for exploitative purposes.
Yeah.
But I felt like it made the metaphor a little darker, a little heavier. Right. And I feel like it was unnecessary.
Somehow, back when Phoenix turned into Dark Phoenix, in the 70s or early 80s, there was definitely a sort of rape overtone to that, too. And even as a kid, I sort of sensed that there was something particularly disturbing about it, how Mastermind had seduced her.
Yeah.
Because they didn't really indicate a physical side to that,
right?
It somehow did rein it in just a little bit from being one of those, oh, this is just going to weigh too heavily on it.
Yeah.
I'll be curious to see. I mean, I'm going to keep watching it. I was a little skeptical at first, but by the second episode, I was enjoying enough that I'm going to keep watching it.
Yeah.
I'll be curious to see where I end up with that.
It has made me want to reread the comics.
Yeah, me too. I mean, here's the thing. I think this did a lot of what Daredevil did, which is that it feels very true to the comics in spirit, but it's a new story.
Right.
There are a few nods, but there are definitely characters in here. Like, there's a character named Malcolm who you'll meet later. I don't know if you've run into that character yet. That develops into a side character. There's a couple really weird side characters in like a brother and
stuff.
The brother and sisters live up door. That is a running thing through 13 episodes, and I never liked those characters.
Yeah,
I'm not quite sure why they did that.
Some of the other little bits of quirk, like whoever the neighbor is, the kind of dude
there
who
is
always
a point
looks,
for that one.
Who always looks
that's Malcolm. Yeah,
yeah.
That's Malcolm.
Who is that?
That pays off.
Is he a character that we know in the Marvel?
No, he's a new character.
Okay,
but anyway, in that first episode.
So him combined with the weird brothers neighbors, I was like, this is kind of they're going like an alternate mix of quirky and dark.
Yeah.
It was weird me out.
I will say this. I like that there's a little bit of dark humor into it as well. It's not so relentless that it's not grim dark.
Correct. I agree with that. It's not.
But there are some dark.
Oh, it's dark. But they have a sense of humor about
stuff.
The tone
of the episode tends to be investigative.
Yeah.
It's not. The tone of the episode is not. Let's weep.
Yeah, but it does feel. This feels
there
more
are
like
moments that are pretty serious.
This feels more like something like Hannibal than it does something like Daredevil.
Yeah, I would agree.
When my wife asked, like, what is it most like, and I was like, it's very Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah,
yeah.
And she was like, oh, okay, I can get it because She has no idea who Jessica Jones is, and I don't think you need to.
I don't think most people do.
I think it's very easy to just plug into it and go. So,
I liked this quite a bit. It sounds like I didn't because I have a lot of gripes about it, but that's mostly because it wasn't what I wanted it to be. I wanted it to be kind of what the comic was, which was more investigative and a little more arced out than one big story. But that's not really what Netflix does. And I forgot, this was originally in development at ABC like 5 years ago. And there is no way an ABC version of the show would have worked. So I'm glad that it went to Netflix and they got something close to in tone what I think I would like to see. I just would have liked to have seen a little less focus on the Purple Man, a little more side story before they dove right into the arc. Because I think the arc is not quite enough material to sustain 13 episodes. But their casting is great. I love their Luke Cage, and it makes me really want to see the Luke Cage series.
And that's coming...
That's coming next year.
Yeah.
Sometime next year. That'll be the next one. But, and yeah, Daredevil. It's solid and worth watching, especially if you like Daredevil and you want to see more of that sort of darker side of the Marvel Universe. It's definitely worth a look. The other thing that has been occupying all my time... is Star Wars Battlefront on PS4.
I think it's been occupying, to varying degrees, all of our time.
Yes.
Our free time.
We forced...
something you gotta binge a little bit.
We forced Dave to go out and buy a PS4.
It's true.
We mind-controlled him like the Purple Man.
I hope all I did was buy a PS4.
But, yeah, we've all played... The three of us have not played together yet.
No, not yet.
I've played with Nick, and I've played with Dave, and I've played with a bunch of other friends and customers. Oh, and I started a community on PS4 for Rogues members called Rogue Gaming or Rogues Gaming. I posted about it on the Facebook. So if you want to join and play with fellow customers and staff...
You said the Facebook, and it just sounded like old people. Like, yep.
How do you work the Facebooks?
Look... I'm old. Anyway, if you want to play with Rogue Gallery management or customers, you can go and like that group. I'm just going to look up the name real quick.
You two could crush rebels with us or blow away
or shoot us in the face probably because none of us are that good.
No, but if they're in the group, won't we be on the same team?
Not necessarily.
Oh, okay.
So, because if you're in a party on PS4 and somebody joins in late, then they wind up on the other team. That's happened quite a bit. You know that. You were on the other team.
Yeah, I know, but that was very infrequent.
Yeah,
the
first time I played, I was shooting at Randy and a couple of our other friends, Father.
Yeah. So the group is called Rogues Gallery Games. So if you go on PlayStation Network, you can request to join and play with us and our fellow customers and stuff.
Yep.
And
unless you've got an Xbox One, in which case we shun you.
Yeah, there have been. We should get one of our friends to set up an Xbox One group because none of us have one, but we have friends who are playing. our former staffer Roxy, her husband Casey, is playing on it, and of course Jerick, you guys all know about it if you listen to this podcast at all, because we talk about Jerick all the time.
Yeah,
he did our song. It's in the credits. The reviews have been a little harsh on this. I think the hardcore gamers did not like it.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Because it didn't innovate enough?
I think that's part of it. I also think that it's not shooty enough. Like, it's not... You can't get...
There's a lot of shooting.
There is, but I think there's not a skill level, which is... some of them want that skill level. You know how people like to, like, own up on people in Call of Duty?
Yeah.
It's hard to do that in Battlefront, because you can still get lucky shots and grenades and all that.
It's true.
And I think if you're a skilled player, that's really frustrating. If, however, you're a less skilled player like me, it makes me want to play the game instead of throwing it across the room.
Right, well, I was excited when I learned about, well, one of the things you can do that's cool in the game is you can partner with somebody.
Yeah.
And is this a common thing in online shooters?
I was wondering that, too.
No, I think this is the first of its kind that
I love this.
You know, usually in those games, or at least as I am used to them, I've only played a few of them, but you respawn, and there's just a handful of respawn points.
Yeah.
You're going to come from, like, one of a handful of them. Here now, if you can choose to respawn near wherever your partner is, which could be, for better or worse, on like the front lines.
Yeah, it could be right in the middle of things.
You could just suddenly pop right out in the middle of like a firefight and just get shot in the head. But it also, but a lot of times it cuts down on that running to get to the battlefront.
There was a great moment last night. We were playing. We were in one of the caves on Hoth, and I popped up, and somebody else popped up, and so like four of us were there. And I almost felt bad. We were playing the Imperials, and this rebel comes running in, and just all four of us just gunned him down. And I was like, we were all like laughing. We were like, oh, I almost feel bad for that guy. It was like Pulp Fiction style.
So what I was going to say is, when we were teamed up, I hadn't downloaded all of the some of the weapons you had.
Oh yeah.
And when you're buddied up with somebody, you get access to whatever their extra gear is.
Yeah.
And that, what is that, homing?
The homing shot.
Homing shot
is pretty good.
That's a good for people of lower skill levels like myself.
Yep.
Because as long as you can generally kind of keep the guy targeted, you can hit him.
If you get a few seconds, you can shoot him from across the map.
Yeah.
Because some of the guys who are good at it can shoot you from across the map with any weapon.
Yep. That's the thing. There's a learning curve to this game.
Yeah.
Like all online shooters.
Yeah.
And, you know, probably if you do a lot of online shooters, it's going to be a shorter learning curve for you. But I'm still in the somewhat frustrating stage where I feel like I peek my head out and somebody shoots me.
Well, I get killed about 20 times every battle.
Yeah.
So if it's on occasion, I get my kill count and my death count are even, or even my kill count's a little higher.
Yeah.
But more often than not, I got 8 or 9 kills and 36 deaths.
Right.
I was very happy. For the first time since playing it, I got the most kills in one session.
I've gotten a couple of those awards, and that's kind of nice.
Yeah, it's always validating, like, yes, I did.
My most satisfying moment recently came in, I'm trying to remember what match it is. I think it's that one where there's, like, it's not the one with the downed sand crawler, but it's one of those there's a lot of sort of I'm not going to remember it. There's a lot of debris around though. So I think it was one of the droid mission ones.
Okay.
And where it's got the flapping tent coverings.
Oh yeah, that's Tatooine
stuff. It's on Tatooine.
There's a sail barge, I think. Is it a rebel ship? I think it's a sail.
This is the smaller map.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so.
That has the rebel barge and it's got a rebel transport. Or it's got the Jabba barge.
Yeah, Jabba's barge.
Rebel transport that flies off.
There was a group of people doing some heavy, nasty sniping. And they had like a trio of people up there. And I managed to, probably through getting lost on the map, come around behind them.
Yeah.
And they clearly thought that there was just nobody who would see.
Yeah.
They were just firing with impunity.
Yeah.
Not trying to take cover, not looking around or anything.
Yeah.
And I just killed all of them.
Yeah, there's something kind of satisfying when you run in beside and someone's like crouched down blasting away at your allies and you just sort of step up behind them and kill them.
Yep.
let's talk about the game itself, because there's four worlds. There's Endor, Tatooine, Sullust, which is sort of volcanic, and Hoth, which is the snow planet, of course.
Nick, just a real quick question. When I did that Star Wars Clone Wars RPG a year or two back, I believe that was y'all were on Sullust.
We were
that
on
was
Sullust.
Where y'all were infiltrated the party and everything like that. Yep. It looked like that.
And there's about, like, 10 different modes.
Yes.
And each mode is a different part of the map. So, like,
I was surprised at how many there were. I'm used to just, like, you go and you kill people or you control points.
They've got basically every kind of shooter map. But the nice thing is the maps are, like, Walker Assault is probably the biggest one. That's a 20-on-20 battle.
Yep.
And that map usually is, like, almost the full map of, like, when in Tatooine, it's got a little sunken area where the Millennium Falcon is docked.
Mm-hmm.
It's got, and then on Hoth, it's of course has the generators that they're going to. It's got ice caves and the rebel base inside the caves and that kind of stuff. Sullust has all kinds of volcanic lava and a big hangar full of TIE fighters.
Yeah, that one's cool.
The maps are gorgeous. The level of detail is just beautiful.
Oh, it is wild. When I mentioned that it's tarps, that's one of those things. There's like tarps that are tying down, you know, damaged ships or gear and stuff like that. And they're like fluttering in the breeze.
Yeah.
Well, not only, you know, if you're doing like a shooting match on the ground, above you TIE fighters and X-Wings and Star Destroyers.
There's battles going on,
battles going on.
I don't know if this actually affects... Can you actually destroy background objects, or does it
no,
look like
it
that?
Just looks like it, because...
Yeah, things will get hit near you, and like I'll see parts and stuff fly
Now,
off.
Some stuff can be destroyed. Like, if you're playing one of the modes with the drop pods, they can get blasted apart. If you're playing
I'm talking about, like, sort of seems like background stuff. I sometimes see pieces come off of it.
I think there's a little bit of that.
A little destructibility.
I do know that I was on Endor, and I was up in the trees, and I saw an Ewok, and I tried to blast him, and he ran and shut his door, but I didn't get to shoot him.
Yeah, I didn't get to kill the Jawas either.
Yeah.
You know, I took some, like, very close shots at the Jawas. I don't think you can
kill them.
Yeah, they're just...
But they look...
They just run.
They run.
They give you... But it gives you a great sense of place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You basically alternate between Rebels and Imperials. When you're playing one round, you'll play Rebels, and the next round you'll play Imperials. There's all kinds of different weapons. They have what they call star cards, which you get three of, and they give you everything from grenades to jump packs to every
other... basically the other gear you can use other than your gun.
And you
basically get two pieces of gear and then one thing that sort of is
a little
power
up.
Focus fire, which gives you more accuracy. Or
faster cooldown time on your weapon.
There's a scanner that scans for enemies, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make... when you hit level 10, you get a second hand, so you can keep two of them ready.
Yep.
And as you level up, you'll also get you'll earn credits that'll allow you to buy more weapons and figure out what you're good at or what you like to use.
Yeah.
Do you want a blaster that's small but packs a punch? Do you want something that's rapid fire like Randy, who just likes to spray the area like a
maniac? I have to because I don't have any accuracy.
Or the one that I discovered the other day that I briefly enjoyed, but only in certain conditions. The modified Jawa gun, which is
essentially a shotgun. Yeah.
And it is super devastating up close.
Yep.
So if you kind of suck, but you're running around in like caves or something like that, you just shoot at everything you see and there's a decent chance it'll drop.
I'm so inaccurate that is one of those things that if you don't make your first or second shot, you're going to die.
Right. It's like your guy is slowly loading the shell in while you're
being pummeled. Do it.
I think my favorite one is the, not the regular pistol, but the one, the next pistol that's up, I think you get
is that the Lando's pistol, his laser pistol.
Yeah, Lando's pistol. That's the DL-17 or whatever. That's the multi-shot blaster.
Yeah.
Is the regular blaster. That is the regular pistol.
Is that the normal Rebel Guard?
Because then there's a Han Solo pistol that you have to like level up to get.
Well, you have to level up to get the other blaster.
Okay.
It's like a level 14 one.
Yeah.
And it's like a multi-shot one.
They all have weird code names, like it's RT-970C or whatever. But that's one of the ones I like. I don't remember exact designations. It might be RT-970C, but it's a heavy blaster with some multi-fire, and that's what I need because, I got to pretty much spray the area and hope that I hit something.
I unlocked that Boba Fett's gun.
I had a hard time using that.
Yeah, it's okay. It's not my favorite. Yeah.
But there's a bunch of modes. There's every kind of capture the flag where there's like droid run where there are three droids. You got to capture the gonk droids. That's one of my favorites. There's drop zone where drop pods come in. You got to capture those. If you hold them long enough, you get bonus gear out of it. There's supremacy, which is taking points, sort of a mobile capture the flag. There's cargo, which is sort of Team Fortress 2 mode.
Cargo's the other one I have a lot of fun. I love playing the TIE Fighter arena.
Yeah, that one's good. Blast.
I haven't done that one yet.
There's Blast, which is straight up deathmatch.
Yep.
There's heroes and villains, where you play the three heroes. So you have teams of six, and three of you will be playing Luke, Leia, and Han. And on the other side, three of you will be playing Darth, the Emperor, and Boba Fett. And then the other three are stormtroopers or rebel troops to help out. And basically, you got to kill all three heroes first.
Yep.
And you got to win five rounds.
It's the best match for learning to use the heroes.
Yeah, but because it's also hard.
In the regular game, you'll occasionally pick up tokens and things that will allow you to transform from your lowly soldier for a short time into one of the, like a Jedi or something.
I just felt like a moron because I was Darth Vader, which is awesome. And I'm walking up trying to fight Luke, and Luke kills me in one move. And I'm like, well, that sucks.
When you find the guys who really know how to do all this stuff.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating.
It's a little frustrating.
There's also Hero Hunt, which I don't recommend to the learning curve at level, because basically on that one, everybody's a troop.
Yeah.
Except for one guy who's playing a hero, and the goal is to kill the hero. And then when you kill him, you become the hero, and then they all got to kill you.
Oh,
and
it's kind of fun,
the first person to 100 kills. It isn't like, if you're me. Yeah. I got my butt kicked on that Hero Hunt thing.
And then, of course, there's the other one, which is the...
Fighter Squadron?
Fighter Squadron.
Yeah, Fighter Squadron's a weird anomaly because it's not ground combat.
Right. And usually, when you're doing ground combat, you can sometimes get in a ship and fly around, fight walkers, fight other ships in the air.
Crash in the ground.
Mostly crash in the ground.
Yeah.
But it's generally localized combat.
Yeah.
It's like flying around over a small town.
Mm-hmm.
In the full-on ship combat one, though, you actually have... I mean, it's like a fighter pilot.
Yeah, there's a map below you, but you're all fighting.
If you're an Imperial, you get to choose between just your basic TIE Fighter or a TIE Interceptor.
Yep.
And on the Rebels, it's the X-Wing or A-Wing. Yep.
I love the A-Wing. It's my favorite ship. Right. They have shields.
That's fast.
Yeah, everybody has homing torpedoes, so you'll get a warning that somebody's homing in on you. You get evasive maneuvers.
Why I think I like that mode better than the others, and why it feels more forgiving, is because in addition to fighting other players, there are drone ships out there.
Yeah, that's true.
The drone ships are, mediocre AI.
Yeah.
Much easier to kill.
Yeah.
Easier to target and stuff like that. So if you just need a quick confidence booster, you can blow up a few of those.
Of course, they will randomly crash into you.
That's true.
And if you are so good at it, it hasn't happened to me because I'm not good.
Yeah.
You could become either Slave One or the Falcon.
Yeah, I've been the Falcon once and it was kind of fun.
Yeah.
I haven't done Slave One yet. But yeah, I'm sure there's some other modes, but there's a ton of different gameplay.
And there's also single player stuff.
Oh, yeah, there's single player and training. And
worth mentioning that with the credits that you get as you level up, you can also alter your character's appearance.
Yeah, I have a dude who's bald and has a beard.
Yep, so you can do this for both Rebels and Imperials, so you can have like a stormtrooper, instead of having a helmet on, your helmet is removed, and you know, you can make yourself look like you or whatever you want to look like.
Well, you should say that it's not like you don't get a character design thing. Like,
no.
They've got several hairstyles and all that kind
but
of stuff.
But male, female. There's male and female. Yeah. There's several different races represented in there.
I want to get to the, on the Rebels because they've got everything from Twi'leks to.
Yeah, as you get to level 40 up through 50, 50 is level cap. As you get up to level 40, there's all kinds of alien races on the Rebel side,
Duros.
There's a Greedo. What do they call it? Rodian. There's the Twi'lek, and there's something else.
That dude with the weird X-like green face. Kind of like big eye stalks and kind of
there's
weird
jowls.
People. What's that?
One of the Dark Maul people.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever they're called, I don't remember. And then on the Imperial side, you get the Scout Walker look, and the Shadow Trooper, which looks clueless. There's all black.
Yeah, they're all awesome.
Very cool looking. So yeah, it's. I mean,
people level up. Does that mean we're going to be getting battlefields filled with Shadow Troopers?
And probably. Aliens? Yeah. Well, the nice thing is, it's a good quick visual shorthand to. Oh, don't mess with that guy.
Right.
or do and just try to kill him.
Yeah.
Kill him.
Last night I got killed by somebody using melee against me.
Yeah.
I'm like. Ow.
Yeah, I got meleeed to death a couple times.
But
the other thing that's nice, there's a lot of vehicles. There's like, if you're on Endor, you can get on the speeder bikes, okay, which is an exercise in terror, by the way.
I haven't found
those things
yet.
Are fast.
Have you done the training scenarios?
No, I haven't.
Because the training scenarios are pretty good.
Yeah.
What they don't depict is everybody will shoot you.
Yeah, the chaos of it all.
Yeah. But there's a speeder bike chase in there.
Okay.
There's one where you get to drive a scout walker.
There's one where you blow up scouts with the air speeder.
And so they're actually pretty good training, and they'll give you a sense of things.
And all this stuff is on the battlefield. You see a little token that looks like a snowspeeder or an X-wing or an A-wing or a TIE, and you can get. And there's an AT-ST you can drive around, which the highest kills I've gotten. I got like 16 kills in an AT-ST.
Yeah, yep. That one's fun to drive.
I've not done it a lot, but in a few of those games I got to drive the AT-AT.
Oh, that's a blast.
And you know, suddenly having the power to just, like, with a shot or two, blow up whole gun towers, take out big squadrons of people and just watch them all go flying.
Yeah, it's very satisfying.
It's good times.
And what?
It's not good times if you're one of the people on the ground and an AT-AT looks at you.
And you just don't even see it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's disturbing when you look over and like, is that looking at my direction? Yeah. Yeah.
And I think what? The first week of December, there's new map?
First week of December, if you got a certain pre-order, otherwise it's the second week of December, but Battle of Jakku, which of course is the one that we see in the trailer for Force Awakens.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so.
And then they're having four maps. Packs.
Yep, DLC, which people are speculating whether or not they're going
to
add more heroes or more troops.
Right?
I would hope so.
More weapons.
I would sure love to see, like, Chewbacca.
Oh, you know what would be a cool thing to add?
You can get his
bowcaster, yeah.
I was going to say, you mentioned the melee thing, Nick, and with that was just like, don't you do just like an elbow jab?
Yeah.
As if you hit the melee thing?
Yeah.
But what if you had like a, what is it, the Gaffy sticks of like a Tusken Raider as like something you can get so you can just clock somebody?
Well, they do have a Tusken Raider emoji or emote.
Right.
I haven't paid any of those because I need all the money for gear.
Randy showed up in a game of mine. He just joined the game and
I gave him a fist bump.
He gave me a fist bump, and I'm like, "How do you do that?"
You gotta buy it.
And no, that's your default. You get three defaults.
Oh, okay.
And then you can buy more and map them onto the other parts, and so you can always have three at a time.
There's a lot of them. There's like 20 emotes.
But I know that the Gaffy stick one, where you like shake your fist overhead, is one of them, which makes me happy.
Yeah, somebody killed me. The Shadow Trooper did that, and I was like, "Oh, you suck."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That one seems like it'd be an ideal one for like the hero maps, where it's like there's only one hero left. Oh, we finally took down Luke.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
but it's a really fun game. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, regardless of the reviews it's getting, I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly not for a big set of people. But if you want to live in the Star Wars universe, which a lot of us do, it's a pretty good good game.
And especially in that action sense, because you can do it in the RPGs, the various Knights of the Old Republic games.
I think we've been living in the Star Wars universe every night from 10 to midnight.
I have, yes. but yeah, definitely worth a look. And like I say, we do have Rogues Gallery Games as a group on PSN. If you want to join us and play,
if you
want
to face us, if you dare,
yeah, I think after our discussion, they're going to dare.
Yeah,
like we all suck.
I was trying to have some bravado, Randy.
Sure,
I'm what's above suck?
I'm solidly middle. I'm usually in the middle, on occasion at the top. So I feel like I'm doing, like, well, I was playing with a few friends the other night. We were the top four positions on most of the time. So
when I
I've graduated from always being at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So I've graduated from that. I feel like that's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
And I do know that sometimes these are a bit of a learning curve. So I'm plugging at it, even though there is some frustration for me at times.
Dave, did you get the Star Wars branded PS4?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't sure. With the Darth Vader thing.
Yeah.
That
would
have been cool. That would have been like $50 more. And
that's all right.
It's better not to.
Yeah. All right. Well, that about wraps it up for us this week. Everybody, hopefully we'll see you on Wednesday. Everybody have a happy Thanksgiving.
Yep.
Or if you don't do Thanksgiving, have a happy Thursday.
Yep.
Off from work.
Chill.
Probably.
Get some sleep. Come see us on Friday.
Yep.
Play some Battlefront.
And play some Battlefront.
Yep.
Until that time.
Yo, Joe!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at Rogues Gallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.